A guide's going to help us negotiate and navigate some of the things about what it is and what it isn't is on the line with us. Excited to have Professor Lawrence Officer. He's the economics professor at University of Illinois at Chicago. Professor, welcome to WGN.
Glad to be on your show, Dane.
So think about this. The tariffs went in. It was Canada Day. I'm not sure who picked that day or why that was the one, but they went into effect at 12:01 on Sunday. That's yesterday. This, on the consumer side and economics and just the way that the business engines work, probably today is the first day that it's really affecting people. And so if you want to break down a little bit, like what does it mean? Is it that big a deal, the situation with Canada?
As far as the overall U.S. economy is concerned, it's not that big a deal. $12.5 billion worth of U.S. goods subject to these higher tariffs. You're talking about the U.S. having virtually a $20 trillion economy. It's really no big deal in the big picture.
And symbolically, and I think before we were kind of teasing the fact that we were going to have you on, a lot of times the news programs kind of say, well, what does it mean and how does it affect, you know, our relationship or maybe the politics side of things? But so economically, it's not that big a deal. Does it matter, the politics, or just how it looks, the optics between the two world leaders?
I'd say it's part of a bigger picture. Trump is putting his own brand on international relations, and he doesn't seem to make too much distinction between traditional friends and traditional unfriends.
When you think about the different products that are involved, the steel, the aluminum, and the way that we kind of work together on some of those, and NAFTA, are those the products that are involved? I know my wife works with a juice company, and so they're already changing their pricing and pricing schedules based on the way that things are going to change a little bit on the orange juice side going back and forth from Canada. So talk a little bit about which products are mostly involved and affected, and then the industry side of things.
As far as the Canadian retaliatory tariffs on us are concerned, they have a 25% tariff on steel and iron. And these are more industrial products, right? You don't go to the grocery store and buy some steel or buy some iron. But Canada has a 10% additional tariff on a whole bunch of consumer products. Ketchup, pizza, dishwasher detergent, sleeping bags, yogurt, whiskey, some very obscure products. And I think American consumers will suffer a bit from the industrial tariff end, but might benefit from the tariffs on the specific consumer goods.
We're going to get into some of the specifics on this when we come back with you. Hey, Professor, we've got to take a quick break. We've got a little bit of an echo and a technical issue, so we're going to handle that, and we'll come back with you right after this break. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. We have Professor Lawrence Officer from the University of Illinois at Chicago. Professor, welcome back. Hopefully we've got some of the... Hey, this actually sounds pretty good. We've got some of the phone stuff set. Do you happen to know where fireworks are imported from on the tariff side? And, you know, in kind of a current events issue related to the 4th of July, is that going to affect us?
No, I don't. But you made an interesting point when we began. The reason that the Canadian tariffs are imposed effective yesterday is that July 1st is Dominion Day, which is the Canadian equivalent of 4th of July.
Now, do they do, and you seem to have your hand on the pulse of many things Canadian, do they celebrate in the same ways? Is it fireworks, or they celebrate, you know, in other ways? Or, I mean, are fireworks sort of a thing that the Canadians do on that day as well?
Being a Canadian by birth, it's quite similar to the 4th of July.
Nice. All right. And then what is it? Because this is when we were looking at this and my wife was telling me about it. It's Canada Day. It isn't necessarily, she said, and she could be completely wrong. We'll defer to you, of course. But she said that that it wasn't because it wasn't independent. So what is it? Like, what would be the American equivalent to Canada Day?
I'd say it was when the 13 colonies combined, the ex-colonies, and started the U.S. of A. Canada Day, I do recall, was when the provinces got together and formed the Dominion of Canada.
Okay.
The Dominion. 1867.
Nice. Okay, so we're getting a little bit of a hit. Well, you're a professor, so that's what we expect. A little bit of a history lesson to go with our current events. And while we were trying to get you back connected, we talked about the importance. You said it wasn't necessarily that big of a deal as far as hitting us in the pocketbooks. And I had brought up something that was there where you look at some of the industries that you think you're helping by, you know, working in and around the tariffs to help support, you know, local, maybe indigenous industries, whether it's in the metals or coal or any of those kind of things. But really what it hurts is It hurts the industries that use those products. So oftentimes, those jobs, when they would use to create products here in America, they use those raw materials that they get other places, right?
You're 100% right. The more important effect will be not on our consumers, but on the workers and, of course, the business owners of the affected industries.
When it comes to a trade war, and, you know, Canada is one, and you've got that unique perspective on that, and that's one of the topics here. Where does it go from here? Because you had Prime Minister Trudeau come out and say, and one of the things wasn't necessarily, we've got to figure a way to work this out. He's come down sort of on a hard line, and that seems to be the way that President Trump deals with a lot of things as a hard line, is that we've got to stand up. We feel like we've got to stand up to America. We won't get pushed around. So where do you see this going down the road? Do you see this being resolved, or do you see somebody backing down and things getting kind of readjusted? What's going to happen?
Rationally, a country like Canada or Mexico should back down, because if we're talking about an equivalent amount of goods on which these extra tariffs are imposed, $12.5 billion in the case of Canada, it hurts Canada a lot more than it does us. So rationally, Canada should back down.
And so when do you think that will happen? Do you have any kind of insight, a gut feeling, tea leaves, a crystal ball that says, what kind of the time frame is this? Or do you think, and you mentioned it wasn't really, it's more of a symbolic thing, is this just going to be the new normal? Or do you think that, you know, somebody's got to back down? You mentioned either Canada or Mexico in those situations, that at some point in maybe, is it a year, 6 months, where they'll kind of feel extra pressure and have to do something?
I think it may have to do with the NAFTA negotiations. Resolving this retaliatory tariff situation probably would be taken care of in the context of NAFTA, which Trump apparently doesn't want to get into until after the midterm elections.
You brought up elections, and you think of NAFTA, and of course Mexico's in the part of that conversation. And we had a change in leadership down there in Mexico, and the president apparently offered up some kind of congratulatory tweet or message saying that he looks forward to working with, and he wasn't really able to get a lot done on the whole, at least the symbolic, let's do this wall and you can pay for it, and what was such a big part of the campaign kind of platforms. Do you see, with the leader that's in place now, do you see things changing in any way on the economic side and maybe resolving some of this? Is this an easier person to work with, in your opinion?
I don't think so. He's sort of leftist leaning, right? And this is quite a major change for Mexico. And in a certain extent, it's still for Canada, too. So each of them has to show, what shall we say, their macho qualities. And Trump, of course, is Mr. Macho. So it might take a while to get resolved, but it will be resolved.
And one of the things we did want to ask as well is, this is in the news right now, and these tariffs have gone into effect as far as, Canada and on the NAFTA situation, talking about that. When it comes to the real big picture, the thing that undeniably is a huge deal for the United States, for the consumers, so many products here, and then, of course, our ability to be that marketplace for so many things that are created in China as they attempt to, kind of ascend that economic ladder into being, one of the, of course, they're one of the dominant countries, but they want to be the economic power if they can be. So talk about that. That's a little bit more of a, kind of like a bigger confrontation as far as what's going to happen there. And I think some serious consequences, more than just the symbolic, could happen with the China situation. I know, I'm sure you talk with students, and I'm sure they ask about it. And you're a student of the passing scene, of course, right? Like all of us kind of taking it all in. What are your thoughts on the China situation?
You've hit the nail on the head. This is much more serious, potentially serious. After all, we don't have an ongoing relationship with China that we do with Canada and, to some extent, Mexico. China's not a traditional friend, at least since the communist government, which goes back quite a few decades. Yeah, this is serious. China is even more macho. I mean, you have a guy in China, President Xi, who really is effectively a dictator. And so he will stand up for China. I don't think China's going to back down. So I think that's potentially very, very serious. And we're talking about, this is very serious. But again, Dane, the trade we have with China is more important to China than it is to us.
So ultimately, right, who's going to be buying all of those Chinese products if it isn't us? And so ultimately, I think that they understand that, right, too. Now, here's the thing that I always thought, and if you've got a viewpoint on this, this would be, I think, interesting to hear. It just seems really unique with President Trump, with his relationship with some of these leaders, and then also the things that maybe the administration is doing on the policy side. Sometimes they're not the same, you know, because you can look at, he has, you know, you look at these threats and they're huge, right? $200 billion if they don't do this, and then another $200 billion as far as the tariff side with China. But yet, when you ask him personally about his relationship with Xi Jinping, he seems to admire him a great deal. He seems to depend on him for some of the things that they were able to do that actually brought North Korea to the table. It seems as though there's a disconnect based on like how he feels about the relationship that he maybe has with that president or leader than maybe the policies that are going on with the country. Is it that whole it's just business kind of thing where he's able to kind of separate what's going on between the relationship and then he thinks or what he feels has to be done on the policy side?
Well, that's a very good point. Again, we should reverse the conversation. I ask the questions. You know, that's a good question. There's no good answer. Clearly, the U.S. relationship with China is complicated. We are partners in trade. To some extent, we're partners in trying to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. But we are competitors when it comes especially to high-tech goods, exporting high-tech goods. And that's the real deal. And Chinese involvement in obtaining our technology is also a big deal. And if Trump is rational, I think he is, these are the two big deals for him. I mean, he's a deal maker. But China becoming number one in high-tech industries, and that is quite something. That is the future. Trump wants to protect stuff like steel industry, aluminum. That's small potatoes. Big potatoes are driverless cars and artificial intelligence and fast computers, et cetera, et cetera.
I want to let the listeners know that we are talking with Professor Lawrence Officer. He is an economics professor at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And here's the other thing I want to know. It's a luxury to have you on to get some of the insight into this, especially on the economics side. And you look at the G8 and that summit just happened, and I think everybody would agree, at least from a public relations side, it was a complete disaster. You know, just the way that there was this dismissal of our traditional allies, right? Everybody felt kind of, it didn't, you know, there wasn't a big kind of kumbaya moment and everybody getting together. And it seemed, even if you looked at it as maybe there are some positive things that you could pull out of it, maybe personally or establishing some sort of dominance over the situation, it just didn't kind of go, it didn't seem like a friendly, comfortable situation. And in the end, President Trump had mentioned, and I don't know that anyone asked him this, but he's like, you know, Russia should be participating in this. And I think for people who paid attention, they were kicked out of it based on some of the activities that they, you know, had in the Ukraine or, you know, some of those where they had taken over some other countries on the battle side, and everybody was upset with that, right? And they got kicked out. That's one of the things you can't necessarily do. But on the economic side, which is your wheelhouse, is Russia an economic? I heard somewhere that Russia's economy is like half of what even just California is. And when was the last time you picked up a product and you think of China as the exact opposite and you looked at it and it said made in Russia? I mean, are they really an economic power at all?
No, China has a total output, what we call GDP, about the size of Spain. You ever hear of Spain being a power? The thing about, I'm talking Russia. Right. The thing about Russia is that it's oriented its economy to producing military stuff. Right? That's why it's pretty advanced in military hardware. But the Russian economy essentially is a disaster if you take away oil. You're right.
And this is, and we've got maybe a minute or so before we let you go, and we definitely want to get your social media so that people, if maybe some of the listeners want to continue the conversation or have thoughts that they want to, or maybe become future students. I think Elif was a student of yours, and of course she speaks very highly of you and certainly learned quite a bit as well. When we talk about the North Korea situation, and that is really what we had to offer, at least one of the things that you look and you put all of those, all the constraints and the tariffs and all of the restrictions that was that were on North Korea and China helped out quite a bit with that. It made it difficult for them to do normal things, you know, conduct business, feed their people, all of those kind of things. And one of the things that the United States has to offer is is support on the economic side and help them be able to, you know, participate in the world economy. And have, I don't know if you've given it a ton of thought, but if that ever happened down the road, and hopefully it's a short road on the disarmament side for the nuclear, is that, you know, what would North Korea be like? What kind of ways would they participate? I know they have a coast. Maybe there'd be some tourism. You heard President Trump talk about this would be a great place to build a hotel. So maybe he'll be there. But as far as either natural resources or ways to participate, what would you see, you know, North Korea's kind of path and role to
becoming? In principle, North Korea could be like South Korea, in principle, but it would have to change certainly would have to change its economic system, so it's more like ours, a market economy, and probably have to change its political system. You can't have one guy who's a dictator who thinks he knows what he's doing. You don't always know what you're doing when you're talking about an economy. But North Korea's economy is like 1% or 2% of South Korea. It's a very small economy, as far as we know.
All right, and then Professor, go ahead and give out the information if people want to follow you. If you got any social, not sure that you do social media.
No, well, they can. The best is to get me on email, which is Lofficer, LOFFICER@UIC.edu. That's the best way.
All right, thanks, Professor. I appreciate you bearing through some of the technical stuff and enlightening the listeners with kind of, I think, a very unique perspective on the economic side all over the globe and specifically here in Canada. So thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for jumping on the show. Have a great 4th of July and belated Canada Day to you as well.
Thank you. Bye.